Welcome and thank you for joining us for another episode of KPMG's Inside International Tax, a podcast devoted to recent developments, observations, and trends related to U.S. international tax. I'm one of your hosts, Gary Scanlon, a principal in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice. I'm joined once again by my co-host, Kristen Gamboa, a managing director in the same group. Hi, Kristen.
Hey, Gary.
On May 22nd, 2025, the U.S. House of Representatives passed an expansive budget reconciliation package titled the One Big Beautiful Bill, which we, or at least I, like to call the OB3. The long-awaited tax bill would extend many of the provisions originally enacted in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, or TCJA, in 2017, including the current FITI, GILTI, and BEAT rates with only small modifications. But we're not going to focus on the TCJA extensions here. Rather, we're going to talk about a new provision included in the tax bill, Section 899, or the Enforcement of Remedies Against Unfair Foreign Taxes. Section 899 combines elements of previous proposals made by Representative Smith, the chairperson of the House Ways and Means Committee, and Representative Estes, a member of the Ways and Means Committee. This proposal would retaliate against other countries' extraterritorial and discriminatory taxes, or more simply, unfair taxes. In today's episode, we'll explore Section 899 in the OB3, why it's in the bill, how it would impact taxpayers, and its future in the Senate. For our discussion today, we're joined by friend of the podcast, Dan Winnick, a principal in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice, who previously served as tax counsel for the House Committee on Ways and Means, and as an attorney advisor with the Treasury Department Office of Tax Policy. Welcome back to the podcast, Dan.
Thanks for having me back, Gary and Kristen.
So before we dive into proposed Section 899, let's talk a little bit about its purpose and policy. On our last podcast episode, we talked about the U.S. negotiations with the OECD and specifically Treasury's requests for the U.S. tax regime to stand side by side with the Pillar 2 regime, exempting U.S. multinational entities and their CFCs from the UTPR. It's pretty clear from the committee report, as well as public statements from Chairman Smith, that Section 899 is meant as a stick to get foreign governments to not enact or repeal their UTPRs, DPTs, and DSTs. Indeed, Chairman Smith indicated that he expects this provision would never apply. So, Dan, should taxpayers take comfort here?
Well, I agree it's not intended to apply. We can't be certain it will not apply. And if the provision passes into law, there's always a chance it will be used. Another area of concern for taxpayers here might be that if the provisions passed into law with all the members thinking that it's never going to apply, maybe they won't worry as much about working out some of the kinks that we're going to discuss. A solution to prevent the application of Section 899 is going to require a lot of work and negotiation. And while there's been some progress, as reported on New Zealand, Italy, India, and other countries, we also have examples like Germany, who just announced that they're exploring enacting a DST. Application will really depend on how global progress is made. For example, on revisiting the UTPR, which was developed at the OECD on a multilateral basis and now is being implemented pursuant to an EU directive, bilateral negotiations won't be enough. We'll need a multilateral solution. The provision applies automatically with respect to the UTPR, DSTs, and diverted profit taxes. So right off the bat, they've identified several foreign taxes that are as unfair foreign taxes. And if any one of them apply, you're hit by this proposal. In some ways, because they cast such a broad net, it may backfire and countries won't have an incentive to, say, eliminate a DST if we don't have a solution to the UTPR yet. I think it's also worth noting with diverted profits taxes that we're already seeing movement from foreign countries. For example, the United Kingdom is considering replacing its diverted profits taxes with a mechanism that uses their transfer pricing system and might achieve a similar policy without triggering Section 899. So I think we're seeing movements from foreign countries in both directions, but not enough movement to convince me that this will never apply.
So, Dan, if Section 899, as currently drafted in the House bill, is enacted, is there anything that Treasury or the IRS can do to delay the effective date of the provision if the negotiations take more time?
The provision as drafted has a number of grants of regulatory authority, but by its terms, it goes into effect automatically with respect to UTPRs, DSTs, and DPTs. In the case of withholding taxes, Treasury has often exercised its authority to limit the application of withholding taxes, even when there isn't a specific grant of regulatory authority. And so that might smooth some of the implementation, at least until tax returns are due. They might also look to the authority to define applicable persons or to determine that there's no longer an unfair foreign tax, even if a tax hasn't been fully repealed.
So in addition to providing the United States a tool for negotiation, Section 899, perhaps most importantly, is a revenue raiser for the OB3. In fact, the JCT estimates that Section 899 will raise over $116 billion in revenue. Is this score impacted if Section 899 is never applied or if a foreign government later removes their unfair foreign taxes?
Scoring for the bill really only matters while the bill is being processed. Once the bill is passed into law, or once the House and Senate pass the same text, the bill will be scored based on current law in effect in other countries. JCT takes into account behavioral impacts of taxpayers, so it's not a static score, but they don't take into account policy responses from other governments. JCT has identified a foreign government with an unfair foreign tax. They're going to assume an unfair foreign tax continues to exist. It's also interesting that the JCT score reflects that proposed Section 899 decreases revenue in the last couple of years within the budgetary window. This implies that taxpayers may engage in tax planning, like moving distributions further forward when rate increases under the provision aren't as large, or that taxpayers may disinvest from the United States if these high taxes actually remain in effect.
Thanks, Dan. That's all very helpful background. But now let's talk a little bit about the retaliatory measures included in proposed Section 899. So, Dan, can you tell us a little bit about what's included?
So there are really two separate measures in the bill that intend to retaliate against jurisdictions that have unfair foreign taxes. The first portion of the provision would increase the rate of tax paid by effective foreign persons. This includes withholding on U.S. source income that's paid to foreign persons, as well as effectively connected income. This section comes from the bill that was introduced by Chairman Smith and is really an updated version of existing Section 891, the provision that allows the president to double the rate of tax on citizens and corporations from countries with extraterritorial taxes. This provision increases the rate of tax annually by 5% until it hits a cap of 20% over the statutory rate. For example, FIDAP income, which is taxed at a statutory rate of 30%, would be capped at a rate of 50%. The second measure, the super beat, which originated from a proposal by Congressman Estes, when applicable, does things intended to make the beat more punitive. It removes the $500 million gross receipts test and 3% base erosion percentage test. So it just turns all impacted taxpayers into applicable taxpayers for beat purposes. It increases the rate to 12.5%. And implements the credit provisions that are scheduled to go into effect at the end of this year if the bill doesn't pass, that would cause regular tax liability to be reduced by all credits, getting rid of the special provisions for the energy credits and the research credit. It eliminates the exception for payments subject to withholding tax. It also eliminates the services cost method exception, which is one that many taxpayers rely on for relief from the BEAT today. And finally, it treats payments to a foreign-related party that are capitalized, other than the purchase price of depreciable or amortizable property or inventory, as giving rise to a base erosion tax benefit. This last aspect of the superbeat is a change from the earlier bill, which instead treated 50% of COGS as a base erosion payment subject to the beat.
So the previous version of the Smith bill explicitly overrode the provisions within tax treaties dealing with withholding taxes imposed by sections 1441A, 1442A, and 1445, without a similar override for the underlying substantive tax rates, which many have flagged as an issue. Does proposed Section 899 maintain the explicit treaty override?
So proposed Section 899 removes all explicit treaty override language and instead relies on an implicit treaty override by referencing any rate of tax in lieu of such statutory rate. Also, in describing the statutory cap that generally limits the increase to 20 percentage points, a parenthetical provides that that cap is determined without regard to any rate applicable in lieu of such statutory cap. These two provisions highlight the intent of Congress that any rate increase be applied by starting with the treaty rate, and this is supported in the committee reports as well. There's an interesting footnote in the committee report on this point with respect to the portfolio interest exemption, which sheds some light on Congress's intent with respect to treaty and statutory exemptions, generally providing that the committee intends for the portfolio interest exemption and other similar exemptions to continue while increasing the rate of tax from the rate provided in treaties, including with respect to zero rate treaties, which are often phrased as an exemption rather than as a rate of tax.
Proposed Section 899 looks to have many issues that it leaves to Treasury to solve. Can you discuss the grants of regulatory authority that are included currently in proposed 899?
Treasury has specific authority to adjust the definition of applicable person and has broad authority to identify unfair foreign taxes within the definitions of extraterritorial and discriminatory taxes and can identify when those taxes are no longer applicable. It also delegates to Treasury authority to issue regulations necessary and appropriate to carry out the purposes of Section 899 beyond what's specifically enumerated, but it specifically delegates authority to provide adjustments to prevent avoidance, listing of discriminatory foreign countries, and that's particularly important for withholding tax purposes. So withholding agents can rely on that list of discriminatory foreign countries to determine whether or not they have to apply the higher rate provisions, providing Congress with updates about the list of discriminatory foreign countries, and providing additional exceptions to the definition of an applicable person, an extraterritorial tax or a discriminatory tax.
Thanks, Dan. Section 899 is triggered, as you noted, by unfair foreign taxes. What's an unfair foreign tax for this purpose?
So there are a few definitions of an unfair foreign tax in the bill. First, the per se on unfair foreign taxes are DSTs, UTPRs, and DPTs. For DSTs, a question exists as to what all is included in the definition of DST. The committee report identifies at least 30 countries with a DST, while the memoranda the White House has put out have identified only 7 such countries. We're still scratching our heads a bit about what potential taxes fill that gap between the administration's identified DSTs and the number in the committee report. And that's the kind of question where Treasury guidance will be important, both so that withholding agents are on notice and taxpayers are on notice, but also so other countries are on notice for what changes the administration might want to see to no longer be identified as having an unfair foreign tax. In addition, over 30 countries have a UTPR because countries, in the case of a UTPR, have stuck pretty close to OECD guidance. That list is easier for us to identify. In addition to those per se taxes, to the extent provided by Treasury, any tax that is extraterritorial, discriminatory, or enacted with a public or stated purpose, indicating the tax will be economically borne disproportionately by U.S. persons, is an unfair foreign tax. So This means that the provision, in addition to the taxes that Congress is concerned about right now, can also be used in the future if a new variety of tax that a future administration finds unfair comes into existence. Importantly, taxes that do not apply to any U.S. person, including a trade or business of a U.S. person or to a CFC that is more than 50% owned by voter value by a U.S. person, would not be treated as unfair foreign taxes. So carving the U.S. out works.
The UTPR safe harbor provided in OECD guidelines currently prevents the UTPR from applying to the income of a U.S. parent. This safe harbor is effective through the 2026 tax year for calendar year taxpayers. If the OECD were to agree to extend the safe harbor or make it permanent, would that convert the UTPR into a fair tax on the grounds that it doesn't apply to U.S. persons?
So, Gary, I just said that carving the U.S. out would be enough, but I don't think that the existing UTPR safe harbor would be satisfactory. Extending the UTPR safe harbor is consistent with the objectives of proposed Section 899, but would not go far enough because it would not prevent the UTPR from applying to the non-U.S. subsidiaries of U.S. corporations or to U.S. subsidiaries of inbound groups. It also wouldn't impact the foreign branches of U.S. companies.
Thanks, Dan. We discussed in our last episode the art of the global tax deal with Michael Plougin. The U.S. has made demands on the OECD, which includes not just exempting U.S. income of U.S. parents, but also U.S. income of subsidiaries from the UTPR, as well as income of CFCs of U.S. companies, effectively treating GILTI as similar to a qualified IR. So, Dan, Section 899 is intended to retaliate against the unfair taxes enacted by foreign governments, but who actually pays the price?
Well, proposed Section 899 applies the rate increase to any applicable person. An applicable person includes the government of a discriminatory foreign country, and the government of a discriminatory foreign country, in addition to being subject to the rate increases, also loses the benefit of the foreign sovereign exemption under Section 892. It applies to an individual other than a citizen or resident of the United States who is tax resident of the discriminatory foreign country. And it applies to foreign corporations that are resident in the discriminatory foreign country. But it carves out U.S.-owned foreign corporations. In addition, it applies to private foundations. And it applies to foreign corporations that are more than 50% owned by those people who are applicable corporations, even if they're not themselves in a jurisdiction with an unfair foreign tax. It also applies to certain trusts and to other entities that are identified by Treasury. Proposed Section 899 would apply the superbeat to any domestic corporation or foreign corporation with effectively connected income that's more than 50% owned by one or more applicable persons. This portion of the rule excludes publicly held corporations from being treated as applicable persons because of ownership by applicable persons. And while we're not entirely clear what publicly held corporations means in this context, it probably has the effect of excluding domestic public corporations, regardless of their share ownership.
So, Dan, you noted that publicly traded U.S. multinational is exempted from the superbeat. Is that also true for payment flows between the U.S. company and its CFC?
Yes. In general, a CFC that is majority owned directly or indirectly by a U.S. corporation will be exempt from the rate increases. So that's an example of a U.S.-owned company, and it'll benefit from the exemption for U.S. owners.
But importantly, the foreign shareholders of a U.S. company could still be subject to increased withholding on dividends, right?
That's right. Foreign holders of debt of U.S. companies could also be subject to higher rates of withholding if they don't benefit from the portfolio interest exemption.
How about foreign multinationals, Dan? Does a foreign multinational organize in a fair jurisdiction? I that is a jurisdiction without an unfair tax, still have anything to worry about with respect to 899?
Yes, it does. Because even if the foreign public company is located in a good jurisdiction, and so it itself is not subject to Section 899, if its U.S. subsidiary is owned through a chain that includes one corporation in a bad jurisdiction, that will cause the U.S. corporation to be subject to the super beat. Moreover, even if every entity in the chain is in a good jurisdiction, payments to a foreign affiliate that's in a bad jurisdiction or owned by an entity in a bad jurisdiction would be subject to the increased rate of tax. So being owned by a foreign entity in a good jurisdiction doesn't provide the same level of protection as being U.S. owned.
How about a foreign multinational organized in a country with an unfair tax? Is there any out for that taxpayer?
In general, a foreign multinational in a bad jurisdiction taints the entire group. However, there is an out for the foreign multinational that is U.S. controlled, where its shareholder base is more than 50% U.S. And this appears to apply even for foreign public companies. So if a foreign public company can establish that its shareholder base is U.S., that might get it out of the rule.
That's helpful. This seems to be a lot of work for people who may or may not be in the scope of proposed Section 899. But there also seems to put pressure on withholding agents and the current withholding regimes, right?
Yes. The biggest challenge for withholding agents relates to payments to foreign entities that are applicable persons because they are owned by another applicable person. Withholding agents are unlikely to collect currently the type of ownership information needed to determine whether a payee is an applicable person subject to increased withholding under proposed Section 899, where applicable person status is based on the shareholders or the beneficiaries of the payee. And they would need payees to self-report this information, including refreshing it if ownership modifications result in the change in the person's status. Similarly, it wouldn't be possible to identify whether a foreign corporation is U.S.-owned, except for in some very limited circumstances. If proposed Section 899 is enacted, Treasury and the IRS likely would need to provide guidance, including potentially updating forms to include information on ultimate beneficial owners, and withholding agents would need to establish new processes and systems to both collect and report additional information. In the meantime, an extended transition period, including turning off withholding based on indirect ownership, will probably be needed.
We've talked a lot about what's in proposed Section 899, but haven't discussed when it applies. So if countries don't fold on their UTPRs, DSTs, and DPTs, Dan, when would proposed Section 899 apply?
Proposed Section 899 would be immediately effective upon its enactment. Its application is delayed through a number of complicated rules. The tax rates with respect to a discriminatory foreign country would begin increasing as of the country's applicable date. A country's applicable date would be the first calendar year, so the applicable date's always a January 1st, beginning on or after the later of three dates: 90 days after the date of enactment of Section 899, 180 days after the date the unfair foreign tax is passed into law by a foreign country, or the first date that the unfair foreign tax begins to apply. However, the increased rates and BEAT modifications would apply to all tax years of a particular taxpayer beginning after, and not on or after, the later of those same three dates that are relevant in determining the applicable date. Therefore, the date of enactment here is crucial. For example, if Section 899 is enacted before July 2nd, 2025, the increased rates and the super beat would apply to tax years beginning after September 30th, 2025. And any enactment during this fiscal year, which ends on September 30th, 2025, would cause the provision to start to apply by January 1st, 2026.
So hopefully Section 899, even if enacted, never actually collects a dollar of tax. But as the saying goes, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Dan, what can taxpayers do to plan for the worst?
taxpayers should start reviewing their structures and their payment flows to determine where Section 899 may apply, both the provisions that increase rates and the super beat. Taxpayers should be thinking about foreign law consequences. Many countries don't provide relief from double taxation, such as a foreign tax credit, if taxes imposed above the applicable treaty rate. They should be thinking about what they're reporting or disclosing to investors and gross up provisions. For taxpayers who've never had to worry about the branch profits tax or BEAT, they should model their exposure, if any. And some taxpayers are even thinking about some of the benefits of being a U.S. multinational or holding some of their structure through the United States, though that's a long-term decision.
If my schoolhouse rock knowledge is right, now that the tax bill has passed the House, the Senate now has the opportunity to amend it. Do you think Section 899 survives the Senate? And do you expect there'll be any changes made to Section 899 in the Senate?
I do think that proposed Section 899 survives the Senate bill, but it's, of course, uncertain, as you say. At the very least, as we've discussed, they will need some revenue raisers in the bill. And based on the JCT revenue estimates, proposed Section 899 is currently the second largest tax revenue raiser from the House bill. It's likely that changes will be made to other provisions of the bill. The Senate's still examining the House bill and considering whether or not it complies with the Byrd rules dealing with budget reconciliation. Soon we would expect to see the Senate's proposed amendment to the House's work, and we'll see what they do with Section 899.
And when do you expect to see the Senate bill, Dan?
Our understanding is that right now, with the Senate reviewing the bill, we can maybe see text as early as next week.
Thank you, Dan, for your insights on proposed Section 899, and a special thank you to Casey Caldwell for her help behind the scenes with this episode. We'll obviously continue to monitor the tax bill as it makes its way to the Senate. As always, please stay tuned for future episodes of KPMG's Insight International Tax to stay up to speed on the latest developments in U.S. international tax. Until our next episode, take care.